Don't just exist. Live. Live on AWR SID Media.
All right, it is 28 minutes now before 2. We're going to try and rush through the book of Exodus, chapter 32. And we are doing it for the purposes of Chew On That. Remember our segment called Chew On That, where we read one chapter, we read it in totality, and then we try and get some insight, some perspective. So this chapter is a bit long-ish, 35 verses. I'm going to try and read through those 35 verses. Read them with me. Reading from the New International Version. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fella, Moses, who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him." Close quote. Aaron answered them, "Okay, take off the rings, the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing, and bring them to me." So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, "These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go down, because your people, whom you brought up out of Egypt, have become corrupt. They have been quick to turn away from what I commanded them and have made themselves an idol cast in the shape of a calf. They have bowed down to it and sacrificed to it and have said, 'These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt.' I have seen these people," the Lord said to Moses, "and they are stiff-necked people. Now leave me alone so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation." But Moses sought the favor of the Lord his God. "Lord," he said, "why should your anger burn against your people, whom you brought out of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say, 'It was with evil intent that he brought them out, to kill them in the mountains and to wipe them off the face of the earth'? Turn from your fierce anger, relent, and do not bring disaster on your people, Lord. Remember your servants Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, to whom you swore by your own self, 'I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and I will give your descendants all this land I promised them, and it will be their inheritance forever.'" Then the Lord relented and did not bring on his people the disaster he had threatened. Moses turned and went down the mountain with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hands. They were inscribed on both sides, front and back. The tablets were the work of God. The writing was the writing of God, engraved on the tables. When Joshua heard the noise of the people shouting, he said to Moses, "This is the sound of war in the camp." Moses replied, "It is not the sound of victory. It is not the sound of defeat either. It is the sound of singing that I hear." When Moses approached the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, his anger burned, and he threw the tables off his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. And he took the calf the people had made and burnt it in the fire. Then he ground it to powder, scattering on the water, and made the Israelites drink it. He said to Aaron, "What did these people do to you that you led them into such great sin?" "Do not be angry, my lord," Aaron answered. "You know how prone these people are to evil. They said to me, 'Make us gods who will go before us.' As for his fellow Moses, who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him." So I told them, "Whoever has any gold jewelry, take it off." Then they gave me the gold and I threw it into the fire, and pop, out came this calf. Aaron. Moses saw that the people were running wild and that Aaron had let them get out of control and so become a laughingstock to their enemies. So he stood at the entrance to the camp and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." And all the Levites rallied to him. Oh, my God. Then he said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Each man strap a sword to his side. Go back and forth through the camp from one end to the other, each killing his brother and friend and neighbor." The Levites did as Moses commanded, and that day about 3,000 of the people died. Then Moses said, "You have been set apart to the Lord today, for you were against your own sons and brothers, and he has blessed you this day." The next day, Moses said to the people, "You have committed a great sin, but now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin." So Moses went back to the Lord and said, "Oh, what a great sin these people have committed. They have made themselves gods of gold. But now, please forgive their sin. But if not, then blot me out of the book you have written." Did you really say this? Hi, I'm Moses. The Lord replied to Moses, "Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot out of my book. Now go, lead the people to the place I spoke of, and my angel will go before you. However, when the time comes for me to punish, I will punish them for their sin." And the Lord struck the people with a plague because of what they did with the calf Aaron had made. May the Lord bless the reading of his word, now and forever. Amen.
Amen.
Your comments, Mfundis.
I was expecting questions more than maybe commenting.
Okay.
But I assumed you'd jump into questions as opposed.
That's all right. We can jump into questions, Mfundis.
Yes. Let's go.
Okay. Let's get into it, Mfundis. So we are observing something very odd. The very first verse says, when the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down, did Moses not tell them how long he'd be gone?
I'm here. According to what I've read thus far, maybe I could be wrong.
Right.
But it seems Moses had not told them how long he'd be gone.
Then how would they be saying he's taking too long? Because you only can say, it's too long now, when you are waiting for the person to come at 1:30 and it's now 5:30. You can legitimately say he's taking long. But if there was no time set, where did they get it from that he's taking long?
When I read this, the thought that crossed my mind is they assumed, and this is me assuming.
Right.
That's a disclaimer. This is me assuming. Just being creative, the place in which Moses had gone to maybe might have had some dangers.
Right.
And somehow they may have assumed that perhaps Moses is dead wherever he is up the mountain. No one can survive this long up the mountain without maybe sustenance and other resources for survival. And thus maybe this could have given birth to this thought that led them into more trouble.
Okay. Let's hold on to that. And then they say, as for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him. If they don't know, why would they act to go back to what they were taken out of? Surely they did not like the circumstances they lived in. Why would they go back to recreating the circumstances they were liberated from?
You see, that's a question I boggled with. I fought with as well.
Okay.
But you have to understand contextually. These people had been exposed to what they knew for 400 years.
Right.
And nothing new, nothing foreign from that was known to them. So God's work or God's desire was to rehabilitate them to a point where they understood that they should not be subject to idols or man-made gods. Yeah.
Right.
That process, I want to believe, required a lot of time and patience, and obviously evidence to show that God is the only true God. Now, on the part of evidence, God showed them beyond reasonable doubt that He is the only true God.
Right.
The 10 plagues, for one.
Yeah.
The parting of the waters.
Yeah.
That they could. So, in terms of evidence, God had given them ample evidence.
Yeah.
But we see the effects. We see the effects of the 400 years that they had spent in Egypt. They couldn't perform, or they couldn't understand that idols are not the thing.
Yeah.
God is the true God. And that's the challenge. This is where my heart was stuck at as well. You know what? God tried.
Yeah. All right, let's go to verse 2. Aaron answered them. And that's where I got stuck, Mfunis. Aaron doesn't say, hey, sit down, Wena. Moses is coming back. I spoke to God as well. I shut up. Sit down, Wena. Sit down. No. Aaron doesn't argue with them. He seems to be right there with them on the same boat. The Bible says Aaron answered, take off the gold earrings. He doesn't argue. Nothing. He's simply ready with a solution to go back to idolatry. What's going on here with Aaron, Mfunis?
Hey. Aaron challenged me as a man,
yeah,
as a family man. I'll tell you that it seems that when Aaron was left to somehow lead,
yeah,
or act in leadership,
right,
the expectation was that he would play the same role more or less,
right,
Moses would play,
right.
I mean, having known also that, you know, there is a true God.
Right.
But he fumbles. He fumbles beyond. Man. He decides to say, no, bring your jewelry so that I can create this idol.
Right.
Which then for me created, maybe challenged me to say, given an opportunity or given a chance or a challenge that I should lead people away from sin and towards,
right,
God.
Right.
How would I deal with the situation?
Right.
So my conclusion, having looked at Aaron and his stance, was that may God grant me the ability to subject my will under His, that He may achieve what He wants to achieve.
Right.
With whoever I come across.
Yeah.
If time had allowed, I would tell you a story of something that happened in my community, and I was challenged to speak,
yeah,
to address a certain issue. But in fear of that the community would harm me,
yeah,
I decided to take a step back. Unfortunately, a school was vandalized. A Muslim school was vandalized the premise that they had kidnapped children.
Oh.
So this doesn't also mean I didn't try my part to say, you know, don't do that. I tried ample times, but I figured these people were going to hurt me if I won't let them be.
Yeah.
So I just distanced myself. So the Aaron scenario had me questioning myself. Did I have enough faith and willingness to allow God to use me to protect that institution?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now,
we need to subject our will to the will of God.
Absolutely. Period. Absolutely. Especially in the face of threats, Mfundis. In the face of a mob. Hey, it's difficult to swim against the tide. Ah, Mfundis, exactly. I tell you. then here's an issue that I found rather interesting. Take off the gold earrings that your wives, so their wives were wearing earrings. Your sons, so the boys were wearing earrings. And your daughters are wearing. So everyone there was wearing earrings. And these are the children of God. At no point does God send them a law through Moses that says, hey, I don't like people wearing earrings, Nina. You can't be my people and still wearing earrings. Quite frankly, on the night of them leaving, God says, I will make the Egyptians positively disposed towards, favorably towards, what you will ask for their wealth. They will offer it. They will give it to you. You'll ask for earrings, they'll give them to you. So God is the one who instigates that the men, women, sons and daughters should be wearing jewelry. Here's my question, Punza. I'm sure that's an obvious one. What is our issue with jewelry if God has no issue with jewelry?
I think it's... There are things you said that I think we need to iron out, but let me try stick to the question. When you read somewhere in Genesis where Jacob, Jacob
right.
had to return back home.
Right.
God, yeah, before returning back home, he says to his servants and his family, this is Jacob.
Mm.
I think it's also God, I'm not sure anymore. But there's an instruction to tell Jacob and his family that they should get rid of all the idols that are hanging on their wrists and their ears or something like that.
Okay.
So the wearing of rings, bracelets, and whatnot, and the earrings, originally, it is tied to idol worship. So that is why you find it dominant even in Egypt, where slaves have got things hanging over their bodies. So God doesn't necessarily have a problem with gold. It's created by him. It's a mineral that he's provided to us as human beings. The challenge is when we take that which God has created and use it as an idol to control our consciences and our lives, to say how we do things.
Okay.
So that's my 2 cents worth regarding that. That's why God allowed them to take the gold and whatever jewelry that they had to take from Egypt.
So you said there are things that I said that need to be ironed out. I want to give you the opportunity to iron them out. Mfundis, go ahead.
Yes. It's not God who instigated that they wear earrings.
Okay.
Yeah. God did not say you can put the earrings on and keep them on your bodies and whatnot. Remember, as I said, there was a need for rehabilitation.
Mm.
Progressively get to a point where they understand that they are liberated. They are now subject to God and to God alone. And them being subject to God would mean that they are free, because being subject to God, you are free. God
right.
doesn't have much. He's not complex. He won't expect you to build a pyramid and not give you a blessing for it. He won't expect you to toil the whole day without resting.
Right.
That's what I wanted to address. That it's not God who instigated the wearing of earrings. It's idolatry and how paganism in the context of Egypt and the Canaanites, you know, that's how it originated.
Okay.
That's the little I wanted to address.
So what I was referring to is what we find in the book of Exodus chapter 3, Mfundis. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing which you will put on your sons and daughters. This is God speaking. And so you will plunder the Egyptians. So God is saying you will ask for gold and silver that you are going to put on your children. God is instructing that this gold and silver and clothes and everything must be put on them. They must wear it.
Hey, I'm not sure if that applies to gold and silver. To clothes, yes, we can agree.
I'm reading it verbatim, Mfundis. I can read it in all the versions you want me to read it in. Verse 22, Exodus chapter 3, verse 22 says, every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold mm-hmm. and for clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So all those three things are put there. And then it says,
yes.
which you will put on your sons and daughters. So all these three things are to be put on your sons and daughters. So God is the one instigating the wearing of clothes, gold, and silver.
I would agree with you on the basis of clothing.
No. I'm talking about the text, Mfundisi. This is not me now who's saying this. It's the text. You can read. Please read on
your interpretation. Your interpretation says the wearing of the three is inclusive of all of them. And I'm saying there might be room that the wearing of anything is limited to things wearable, like clothing. And gold and silver could be used for other purposes in the future, as we see God ask them to bring it for the building of the sanctuary and whatnot.
I understand, Mfundisi, so, but here the text reads it. Kindly read it from your side, perhaps, because here it doesn't distinguish the wearing of clothing from the wearing of gold and silver. It mentions the articles, which are silver, gold, and clothing, and then what should be done with those articles.
With it. Okay. What verse are we reading?
This is Exodus chapter 3, verse 22.
Chapter 3, verse 22.
That's correct.
I'm going to read it on my end. But every woman shall ask of a neighbor, namely, of her who dwells near her house, articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And you shall put them on your sons and your daughters. So you shall plunder the Egyptians. Yes. That's what the text says.
So it speaks of all these three articles, clothing, gold, silver, and then the instruction is the clothes, the gold, and the silver must be put on the child's sons and daughters, isn't it?
I would rather we move on.
We can go back to chapter 31. I'm just sharing with you, Mfundisi, where I got from when I say God was instigating the wearing of gold, fine clothing and jewelry, all the jewelry and the fine clothing. It comes from God. That's what I was suggesting. And you're saying that's not what the verse says. That's what you're saying, Mfundisi.
I'm saying that there's a possibility that the verse is not saying that, based on interpretation.
Okay. Not a problem. Not a problem.
We don't have a reference of jewelry being part of clothing.
Of the wearables.
Wearables. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
The first time we hear of bracelets and jewelry, as I said, is in Genesis, where Jacob has to go back home. And the instruction is that it should be taken off.
Okay.
It's referred to as idols. So I'm reluctant to agree with the notion that it's God who instigated it.
Nonetheless,
if that's your interpretation, it's okay. And I'm not going to argue against your interpretation.
I want to throw the verse to the people. They will interpret it for themselves. I was just giving you the basis of my statement. Yeah. I want us to go back now. But before we go back to chapter 32, we do have a text message. It says, type of Christ and his coming is also said to be delayed as if he had given time frame. Aaron and his reaction, the people rise as far as their leaders. Last point and question to Mfundisi Dlamini. Why is it that Moses prohibited God's wrath waxing hot against them only to go on and exercise his own wrath on them? Thoughts, please. That is one of my questions as well, Mfundisi. I'm glad this person sent him our greetings from Paula Park. So this person doesn't tell us his name, but he says, I must send you their greetings from Paula Park. Go ahead, you can respond, Mfundisi.
The person probably knows me.
Yes, apparently.
I thought about this. Yes. I was expecting this question. I think of all the questions that I anticipated, this is one of them.
Yes.
But there's another one I expected. It hasn't come. I'm ready for that one as well.
Okay.
Let's try to answer this. God's wrath compared to Moses' wrath, we can safely say God was ready to obliterate them out of existence. Yeah. So which is better? That's point number one. The better they get punishment for Moses as opposed to God. That's number one. Number two, Moses has to be accountable to God for the people that he's responsible for. Mm-hmm. So he can't turn a blind eye to such an atrocious sin. Nonetheless, he doesn't obliterate all of them. They need to be rehabilitated. They need to know that idolatry is a sin.
Right.
And by the way, it seems radical that Moses would do something like this.
Hmm.
But equivalent to the evidence that they were given for them to understand that there is a God, the only true God. It seems fitting then for such a punishment that after all that has been done for you, how dare you say that it is an idol that took you out of slavery?
Right.
So, the matters of belief or matters of faith are a serious thing. We can't take them for granted. We can't play around.
Remember, Mfundisi, this person's question is, Moses says, "Ayi, Thixo, you can't do this. You can't be angry against your people." And then when Moses reaches the bottom there, he themselves gets angry. And yet he had stopped God from being angry. And he goes on to do the worst. He breaks the law that God had written with his own finger. Yeah? So this person's question is simply saying, what is wrong with Moses? He said it's wrong when God gets angry, and he thinks it's right when he gets angry. And then he goes on to give instructions, which is my follow-up question, Mfundisi. He gives instructions that God did not give, that people, brother must kill brother. God did not say anything. God's anger was quenched when Moses said, don't destroy your people. Where did Moses get it from now that God said, you must take up your sword and kill? Where did that bloodthirstiness come from? It didn't come from God.
No, definitely. I agree with that. I'm just saying that as much as Moses is, look, I'm not going to defend Moses. Maybe he got emotional, as we've seen him get emotional in other instances.
Other times, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the stone and whatnot.
Absolutely.
The point I'm trying to make here is that maybe Moses was saving them from something far worse from God. He couldn't let that event go unresolved. Something had to be done.
Right.
Unfortunately, he did what he had to do.
Right.
That's to me, as much as it would seem wrong as well, it was logical. You know, I don't want to use my personal situations and stories, but I'll tell you this.
Yes.
I've had to deal with a mob that was ready to kill a naughty young boy in the community. Yeah, they were ready to stone the boy. So in my intervention to prevent the worst case scenario, I took the shambok.
Yeah.
And gave him lashes on his behind. And I had to make it look gruesome.
Yeah.
And as if, you know, I'm for the community.
Right.
At the same time, talk to the community, say, guys, no, the boy is now disciplined.
Right.
He will never do the same thing again.
Right.
Give him a chance to at least maybe take a better turn to change things in his life.
Right.
And the boy's life was preserved. Whether I was wrong or right, I don't know. But I saw the need that if I don't act here, we'll be burying this boy in a few weeks' time.
Okay.
So for the preservation of life, let me intervene. My intervention is not that I will turn a blind eye to the wrong that has been done.
Right.
Unfortunately, the consequences of my action were not so palatable, but it's fine. A life was preserved. And I think that's more or less what I'm trying to communicate.
And then why did he lie? Why did he make up things that God never said? Verse 27 is what bothers me. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. God never said that.
Verse 27.
Yeah. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, said. Why is he lying? Why is he involving God in his anger? Huh? Why lie? Why is this man of God lying?
I know. I'm not going to defend Moses. I don't know. That's why he lied.
and that's where I come to say, you know, men of God are men. Sometimes they say things that men would say and then claim it's God. And this is probably what we do in our churches as well. We do things to one another as believers and then claim it's God. We do things at a session and claim it's God.
I better you say it than me. But it's a valid point. I was actually teaching on that yesterday.
Yeah.
John chapter 5, the healing of the man at Bethsaida.
Right.
After Christ had healed the man on Sabbath.
Right.
The man of God, the Jews had a problem with him carrying the mat.
Right.
On Sabbath, and then they saw fault with Jesus Christ.
Right.
Healing him on Sabbath. That for me was somehow a wake-up call to say, hey, our reliance on these men of God is a problem.
Right.
Yeah, let's rely on God, obviously with room of accepting that the men of God might fault as well.
Right, right. One last thing, once our time is already up. Aaron, I don't know what is up with Aaron. Aaron is creating this fable now. It's like a child who says, I didn't do it. It is a pool again. Moses is asking, why did you do this? And he says, well, I just put in gold into the fire and poof, this came out.
He says, came out, yeah.
And out came out this calf. Really? I mean, we have a tendency as people to minimize the bad things we have done. What's going on here? Verse 24 was laughable for me. He's asking, says, well, I so told them, whoever has any gold jewelry, take it off. Then they gave me the gold and I threw it into the fire and out came this calf. And I'm reading it verbatim. I'm not even trying to mock it. That's how it is written there. What's going on here? This is a grown man who's to become the chief priest, the high priest, and he's speaking like a child. What? What do you make of this, Mfundisi?
That's the effect of sin, Mfundisi. That's the effect of sin. It dwarfs the mind. It dwarfs the senses.
Whoa.
And you'd find a grown man risen like a little baby. It's happening even in our time.
Yeah.
It's happening. It's happening. We see old men helping themselves with little children.
Hey.
We see the abuse of substances. It's the effects of sin.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, if you read maybe a parting thought. If you read this book of Exodus, you will discover that for the progress or for some progress to be achieved with regards to the children of Israel meeting or reaching the Canaan land or the promised land, there's an entire generation that had to die.
Yeah.
That is an appalling, the worst case scenario of what sin can do. It can stop any progress from happening for years on end until a certain generation dies and then things can be done.
Yeah. Sometimes the death of a generation is the best solution. And Funis, let's end it there. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate you coming through to talk to us. Looking forward to our conversation on Friday. Have a wonderful day for them, Funiswa.
Likewise, man of God. Thank you so much.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.